1, 2, 3. Acoustic Encounters with David Nogrisman and Danny Barnes.
Hello, acoustic music lovers. You're listening to Acoustic Encounters. I'm Danny Barnes.
And I'm David Nogrisman.
David, tell us when you met Django on the astral plane.
I met him on a record turntable, Danny.
That's right.
Never had the pleasure.
I was just trying to be the Philomena Kunk of bluegrass music. You ever seen that lady when she interviews and she just asks these completely dumb questions? You see her, she's on the BBC.
No.
She's hilarious, you know. She asks these just
You're doing a good job.
Typecast.
Maybe I'll call you Phil.
We're talking about that record you got called We Love Django. And man, there's a lot of we on there. You got a lot of musicians on there.
Well, it's hard not to love Django Reinhardt. He's probably the most famous guitar player in the world. He kind of reinvented the guitar in his own fashion. And today, his style is known as gypsy jazz, but it's very personal style. And it's hard to know where to start with Django because he had such an impact.
You know, on the liner notes, it had the comment, one of the most influential musicians of our time, and I think that's probably right. The lineage of what he's injected into music is still kind of being felt today, you know?
That's true. He's influenced
every jazz guitar player.
Every jazz guitar player, and spilling over into popular music. It's hard to find a guitar player that wouldn't mention Django. Everybody from Chet Atkins, Les Paul, it's just incalculable, his influence. It's got all the elements of great music.
And a great story.
An amazing story. He was a gypsy, lived in a caravan. There was a fire in his wagon. There were some plastic flowers that they were selling that caught on fire. He was severely burned, especially his left hand. He was told he'd never play again, and he certainly proved that theory.
He just had a couple of fingers going, right?
Right. I think he basically had his first two fingers, and I think the other two were kind of burned
fused together or something like that. He would use that some, though, right? Like some of his little nub there. It seemed like it looks like he's using it some.
He used it all, Danny.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, somehow. I can relate to this because when I started playing the mandolin, I didn't really know much about fingering, and I gravitated toward using the first two fingers because they're the strongest. Having that handicap or limitation, I think, inspired him to create this style. I mean, it sounds like he's got four hands. Mm-hmm. He certainly made the most of that handicap.
Really long lines. If you look at the transcriptions, his lines are like really long, you know.
There is a video that surfaced a number of years ago where you can see how he does it. It's still pretty amazing what he accomplished with an injured hand like that. Nevertheless, he became a legendary guitar player. So we decided to put out a compilation of Django compositions by various musicians. Some had been released on our label and others were in the can, so to speak, played by myself and various other guitar players, mandolin players, all inspired by Django. It might be interesting to hear one of his first recordings.
I think so.
From 1928. He played banjo guitar in this session with Jean Versade, who was an accordion player.
Far out.
And there's an unknown slide whistler on this recording. It was recorded on June 20th, 1928.
We're close to June 20th now, baby.
Yeah, we are. It's just about 98 years ago in Paris.
Somebody could write a novel about the mysterious slide whistler that's on here.
Let's give a listen. This is Django's earliest recording.
Far out.
Thank you.
Banjo guitar thing sounds like a tin roof. Like it's really got a cool hollow sound on there.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of a Musette vibe there. Is it got something like a Musette?
Yeah, it's a waltz for sure.
The banjo guitar was a really good choice because you could play that thing loud.
And there's some syncopations in there. You can hear where it started.
Did you say how old he was in that recording? Did you say teenager?
Well, he was born in 1910, and so that would make him 18.
Wow.
It's interesting because the fire was on the night of November 2nd, 1928, and this recording was made in June of 1928.
Well, just right before then.
Yeah.
Wow. He had all his fingers in.
I guess he just came back with a vengeance from that fire and within a couple of years was creating the music that we all...
The closest guys to him that you knew were Sven and Stefan. They both played with Django, correct?
Yeah. I guess in 1931, he met Stefan Grappelli.
Whoa.
Stefan, I think, was 2 years older. He was born in 1908. They were both members of an orchestra at the Ambassador Hotel. They'd play for afternoon teas and ballroom dancing, that kind of stuff. And Stefan told me that during the intermissions, when they were on a break, they would jam together and make up these little tunes. And they were really, according to Stefan, trying to imitate Eddie Lang and Joe Venuti.
Oh.
Yeah. They started recording, I think, around 1926 or 27 and made these incredible records. Really, the earliest string jazz, what you'd call string jazz.
And what was they at? Were they New York guys?
Eddie Lang and Joe Venuti were both born in Philadelphia, Italian Americans. Eddie Lang was actually a bit older. He was born in 1902, and Joe Venuti was born in 1903. They must have met in Philadelphia, but they both became part of the developing jazz scene in New York City. Both of them were part of Paul Whiteman's orchestra.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. In fact, there's a film called The King of Jazz. It's actually one of the earliest color films made in the late 20s, and there's a bit in there of them playing.
No kid.
But in any case, they made some records together, instrumentals. They were pretty popular, I guess, and somehow were heard by Django and Stefan, and a number of musicians in Europe really got excited about American jazz.
The Armed Forces Radio played a lot of that stuff over there.
Yeah, during World War II, Django made some recordings with the British Air Force band.
Really?
Yeah, big band.
Wow. He did a lot of different things. There's stuff with him playing electric guitar. And was he in Hollywood at all? Did he ever go out there? Or?
Django, I believe, made one trip to America at the invitation of Duke Ellington.
Wow.
I think it was in 1946. And there's some rare recordings live. I think they were made in Chicago. And they also played Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
But I think for a bunch of gigs, Django was, I mean, he was a real gypsy. He would just wander off. Very unreliable. Stefan told me this, you know, he would disappear, wouldn't show up for gigs. Yeah. Of course, Stefan was kind of the opposite.
Meticulous.
He would organize everything. But they made an incredible duo. And out of these informal jam sessions in between their performances with this orchestra, they came up with what would become the music of the Quintet of the Hot Club of France, a group that had three guitar players, two rhythm guitar players, one of whom was Django's brother Joseph, and bass, Django and Stefan. So there were three guitars, violin and bass, and they were becoming very popular in England, and the war broke out, and Stefan ended up remaining in England, and Django went back to Paris. In 1949, after the war, they met up in Rome and made a whole bunch of recordings with a rhythm section of piano, bass, and drums. And Django and Stefan.
Like a full
rhythm
section.
Those records are...
Man, what a prolific career. A lot of records.
Django passed away. He had a stroke following a botched dental surgery. He passed away at the age of 43 in 1953.
Young.
I think he just kept creating until the end, you know. He wrote a lot of tunes. Stefan and Django wrote tunes together. A lot of these compositions are on this We Love Django collection.
Right, yeah. And you got a huge cast of characters on there on that record playing. Don Sternberg's on there.
Yeah, Don.
Tiny Moore's on there.
Yes.
Jethro Burns is on there. You're on there.
Yeah, well, we all dip into the Django, Stefan repertoire. There's just great classic tunes that musicians love to play.
Did this record have stuff that you kind of already had, or did you do some recording for the record as well? Or was a mixture of the two?
I think it was stuff I already had. Some of it had never been released, and some have. It's kind of like a sampler, but just highlighting the compositions of Django.
Now, when you were in New Jersey being a bluegrass guy, where did you find out about Django? When did you first become aware of him?
I actually found out about Django in Berkeley, California, around 1966. I was living in Berkeley.
I didn't know you lived in Berkeley.
I was a mailman in Berkeley.
No kidding. You and Charles Bukowski?
Was he a mailman?
I think so, yeah. But that's where you first heard Django.
My friend Eric Thompson turned me on to Django.
Wow.
A particular record, which was an LP. I think it was an English LP that was all material from the 1949 sessions in Rome.
That had drums and bass on it. You said piano, you said?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're mixed kind of down. What stands out is Django and Stefan, for sure. And that's where I first heard a lot of tunes that I later played with the quintet.
When did the other kind of acoustic heads kind of figure out about him? Because everybody knows about him now. Like, were they kind of contemporaneous with you, or did you notice that at some point a lot of your friends started catching on? Like, Jerry must have dug him.
Jerry Garcia, I'm sure, was familiar with Django probably earlier than I was. I think the interest in it grew a lot. I started playing with the quintet and Tony Rice tunes like Minor Swing and Swing 42.
When you met Tony or whatever, he already knew about Django, right?
He did. But
way into it.
That wasn't his big influence. You know, I kind of rearranged Minor Swing and recorded it with Stefan when I met him, and we worked together on King of the Gypsies, and I invited him to play on the Hot Dog album, and we recorded my arrangement of Minor Swing, and he never said a word about it being different than Django and Stefan's arrangement, which, looking back on it, most people would have said, hey, that's not the way to play that, kid, but he just dug it, I guess. And I believe he started playing that arrangement.
That's cool.
Later. I mean, we could listen to that.
Sure. Genre of music. They have like bands that play gypsy jazz. They have like festivals. They have records. This is a huge impact on acoustic music. There's a lot of guys that are kind of Django files.
Like bluegrass, it took a number of years for it to just get absorbed by the community.
Because I remember back in like 1975, 76 in Texas, good bluegrass pickers, when they were looking for something new to do, they all just started getting interested in Django kind of all at the same time. It probably was your records that kind of did that.
People like Jethro Burns and Johnny Gimble and Chet Atkins, they were all heavily into Django.
But you go
Django.
To any bluegrass festival with guitar players now, and every one of the guitar players in the contest knows some Django tunes. It's a part of the vernacular now, you know. It might not have been in 1950, but it sure is now, where a lot of guys are very familiar with Django's music.
For sure. We could listen to the original recording of Minor Swing, which was recorded in 1937. The quintet was pretty developed by that time.
Yeah, that sounds great.
This is a real classic.
Who do you think was talking there at the end?
The band, you know, probably Django, you know, for cool. sure, yeah.
Man, we got to hear that with you guys playing with Sven and everything. Can we play
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we can listen to that. That original recording is in the key of A minor, and I put it in the key of D minor. You know, the melody at the end of the original arrangement, do, 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 is different than at the beginning. The beginning is do, 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 do. And my version, the beginning is like the end of theirs in a different key. And then I had a different bridge. We talk about that on this live recording with Sven. He punishes me for doing that.
Can we listen to that a couple of times?
Yeah.
We're going to do a tune that I recorded that Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli wrote. And I departed from the original recording of this.
You got it wrong.
I got it wrong.
Yeah.
And so
because I played it with
I am
guys
paying
when
for
it
now. I am bowing to Sven's influence, and we're going to try and recreate or get the feeling of
what
the original.
What is the feeling of the original? It's called, in English, you call it minor swing. But that's not the right title. It should be announced in French, of course. Soin mineur. I met Django and Stefan before the war in 39, Paris, and they played the thing. It's not really composition. Four bars and the rest is improvisation. But we'll see if we can recreate the... Soin mineur. Un, deux, un, deux, trois, quatre. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that was faithful to the original.
On the A part, there's a place where I couldn't tell if Django was like either bending or sliding into a note on that theme. I never heard, noticed that before, but you did it on the mandolin.
Really?
Bum, bum, bum. There's like a little slide there.
Yeah, well, that's one thing about Django's style. He's got everything going on, including those amazing bends and slides, you know, that are really...
evocative.
Evocative and got really taken up by rock musicians.
There was one lick where Sven quoted that lick from the Django record. I heard a little bit of Jesse McReynolds in what you were doing.
Yeah, he threw in, Sven put a
you
little...
You know the one I'm talking about?
J.S. Bach in there, too.
I didn't catch that.
Or maybe that's Mozart.
Huh. I caught the Jesse McReynolds.
You got to use what you got.
Fish with what you brought.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a cross-pollinization going on there. And, of course, Sven was one of my heroes.
Did you bring him over for a tour, or were you over there?
Yeah. When I met him, he came to a gig at the Café Montmartre, famous jazz club in Copenhagen. That's where I met him. He came backstage. Kind of blew my mind, and I...
Did you know he was coming, or he just walked in?
No.
Well, he had a long career, didn't he?
He started with Oscar Ellman.
Really?
Yeah, he made his first session in 1935 in Copenhagen with Oscar
Ellman. Wow. That's a whole other can of worms there, yeah. Oscar Ellman, man.
You know, he was contemporaries with Django and Stefan and knew them and jammed with them. He told me that every time they jammed, Django liked Sven's violin and always wanted to play it. Django actually started on violin.
Oh, you mean his instrument? I thought you meant his playing. You're talking
his
about his violin.
Instrument, yeah.
Yeah.
Sven told me that he usually played guitar when they jammed, and Django played his fiddle.
Wow. I didn't even know that. He could play fiddle. I didn't know that.
I asked Sven, what did Django's fiddle playing sound like? And he said, about like Stefan's.
Oh, wow. No kidding. Can we listen to Oscar Ellman play Daphne?
Sure. It's the only recording I could find of Oscar Ellman playing a Django tune. They were friends and rivals in Paris.
Rivals.
Friendly rivals. Interestingly enough, Oscar Ellman recorded this piece in February of 1953, and Django passed away in May of 1953.
Wow.
Thought that was kind of spooky.
Yeah.
So let's check it out. Yeah, they got the ending from Minor Swing on there. Of course, that ending is probably on dozens of things.
I love his phrasing and tone, you know. He never sounds like he's in a hurry, Oscar Ellman. Even when he plays quick, he sounds like he's relaxed.
Leonard Feather, jazz critic from the 1930s, famously said that Oscar could outswing Django.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I like his sound. Great arranger, too. He's really good at arranging, you know, big things.
Right.
You know?
His recordings are a little more arranged than Django's, but his playing is totally improvised. Mm.
Sometimes didn't he play like a resonator guitar?
Yeah,
national
he did.
Kind of guitar,
yeah, national guitar.
That sounded like a wooden guitar there.
There's pictures of him with both. I think the Nazis confiscated his national guitar because it
really?
Was metal.
No kidding. Hey, could you talk a little bit about Django's guitar? That's such an iconic guitar. Was it a Selma, like a McAfee?
Yeah, Mario McAfee designed a guitar in Paris in early 1930s. His guitars had this big sound hole. It looks like the letter D on its side.
Mm-hmm.
They call it D holes. And it also had an inner sound chamber. I think he licensed his designs to the Selmer Company. And the Selmers produced guitars called Petite Bouche, the small hole. Django played both types.
Oh.
I think John Jorgensen has a guitar that was owned by Django.
John Jorgensen's another player on this We Love Django record,
yeah,
too. He's on
actually,
there, too.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
Django recorded a few solos that were just simply titled Improvisation Number 1, Improvisation Number 2.
Did he play one of those? He must have transcribed
it. Yeah, he transcribed it.
No kidding.
Learned it note for note.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you want to hear it? Just
yeah,
for
let's
kicks?
Listen to it. I'd love to hear it. Where did the Django recording of that come out? Was that was that like on a 78?
Yeah.
That? Wow. Man, he really got the Django nomenclature and the sort of connective tissue, you know, the vibrato and He nailed that sound.
Yeah.
Can we listen to that Swing 42 with you and Martin playing?
Yeah, sure. You know, this is a tune that I started playing with a Great American Music Band and played it with my quintet on shows. And when I got to tour with Stefan, we played this. It's on the live album. It's almost as popular with the bluegrass guys as Minor Swing. It's a catchy tune. So we'll listen to Django and Stefan, and then we'll listen to me and Martin.
Sounds good. Beautiful track there, wow.
Yeah, you can tell Django's getting a little more modern in 1949.
The piano's a nice texture.
I think they really dug that rhythm section.
Yeah, it tightens up instead of the guitars, like two guitars tightens up all that.
Okay, well, we could check out...
You and Martin getting down. Thank you. you quote Little Rawhide in there, David?
Did I?
No.
Actually, that was previously unreleased. I'm not sure where that was from. It might have been from Yoshi's Jazz Club in Oakland.
And you guys sound good on that.
Oh, thanks. Maybe we should play one of these tunes that Stringology did.
Sure.
Blue Drag. That might be a cool one to play. This is a group with a good friend of ours, Eric Bogart, who's really an amazing guitar player and also plays drums. He had the honor to play the very last gig that Benny Goodman ever played in his life. So Eric actually overdubbed some snare drum on this. So he's playing guitar and snare drum, accompanied by Terry Ann Stratton on rhythm ukulele and our own Tracy Grisman, my dear wife, playing upright bass. Blue Drag.
All right.
Actually, this was written by Earl Hines and recorded in 1932. It's largely associated with Django and Stefan, but he didn't write it.
So. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to Earl Hines, Earl Father Hines, right?
Yeah. I mean, Django is really responsible for a large part of the acoustic music scene as we know it today. He's one of the cornerstones, I'd say.
There's like a Django band probably in almost every town's pretty much got a group of guys playing this stuff.
Just like bluegrass, just like choro music. There are all these important genres that aren't the mainstream, but they certainly have affected everything in the American musical landscape.
It's worth pointing out, Tracy painted the record cover as well, the picture of Django.
Good point, yeah. And he's playing, of course,
the banjo guitar
thing. The banjo guitar is where it all started.
He looks really young, too. He's really young in the picture, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for taking this trip down memory lane with me again.
Love it. I've had a great time listening to all this music, and it's been fun to hear what you think about it.
Well, thanks, Danny.
Thank you, David.
We'll see you next time.
Next time, listeners. Take care.
That's all we have.